Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast with your host, Adam Emmert.
What are we going to do about emoji-shaped floor pillows, especially the poop emoji? This is out of control.
And Brandon Schultz.
Seahawks fans should not call that a Fail Mary game. We won. How is that a fail?
Go Hawks!
Welcome to the Seahawkers Podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, a good buddy, Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
What's up, Brandon? This is these are not the most fun podcasts. The ones where we say, well, guys, we've reached the end of this season. I guess we're not going to the Super Bowl.
This is only the second time we've ever had to do that, though.
Yeah, it's still not fun, Brandon. I'm not used to it yet.
I agree. Yeah. It's not fun. Especially how you hyped up the team going to the Super Bowl almost the entire season.
Well, once I started, I couldn't stop. You know, I was only off by two games. Okay.
Yeah. We'll forgive you.
Okay. Thank
well,
you.
I will. Wait, I won't speak for everyone.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, I didn't break Earl Thomas's leg, so.
No, you know. Or Tyler Lockett's or, well, as far as I know.
No, that wasn't me out there.
No.
It definitely wasn't you
on the Earl hit.
Absolutely not. No, if you ever confused me for Cam Chancellor, you are a blind person.
Right. Well, the good news is a week from now, we should be talking about Kenny Easley in the Hall of Fame. So that's good Seahawks news.
Sure. I like how you're already glossing over the last game. That's fine.
Well, we're going to get into it. We're going to recap this Falcons game because, Adam, as we've talked about in the past, we have to feel all the feels. And and some people, yes, they don't like to tune in for it, but others do like to tune in just to remind themselves and maybe think about what went wrong. And yes, to feel all the feels.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's part of the process, you know, just the state of mourning that you have over the loss of a season. And the thing is that we all sit here and we feel like, oh, my gosh, the season's over. And it's like the worst thing ever. You know, your team is in the divisional round of the playoffs.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like ever since Russell Wilson has been here, like we've gotten to at least there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a million other teams that would kill to be in that position, you know, to have that sort of consistency and in competitiveness and within the league. And but yeah, I mean, we're all a little sad about it. So yeah, you have to recap that game a little bit and just work through the things that did go wrong and how maybe you can look towards the future and to know that there's ways that we can improve, get better and learn from this experience. Cause that's what you have to do. The marquee thing that you can tell about a person, the number one trait, I think, is how you deal with adversity. Well, here's some adversity for the Seahawks. They lose again in the divisional round. Let's see how they deal with it going forward.
Yeah, and adversity is fans, too. You can really test your fandom by going through some adversity, too. It's not all, you know, everybody, we can't all be Patriots fans and just have, you know, Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl every other year. It works for them, but that's about the only one.
Well, the thing is, too, is it feels that way right now again because Tom Brady has been back to the Super Bowl a couple times here recently, or at least once. And I mean, he's on his way again this year. But there was a stretch there where they didn't go to the Super Bowl for many years and they were knocked out in the divisional round or the championship round year after year after year. And, you know, up until the run they had through Super Bowl 49, there was legitimate talk before that Kansas City game of that year whether or not the Tom Patriot, Bill Belichick dynasty was over. You can be a great organization, have sustained success, and it, you know, take a couple years to get back to a Super Bowl. That happens because in the salary cap area, you got to reload and rebuild and take your shots when you can get them because you can only have the kind of depth and stuff to make it to a Super Bowl and injury luck and some of those things so many years in a row. I mean, and that's really what you saw catch up to him in this game against Atlanta, right? Brandon is a little bit of injury luck catch up to him, a little bit of depth issues catch up to him, and they end up losing to the Falcons on the road.
Yep, and we're going to get into that. I want to talk about whether or not the Seahawks window has closed because that's the thing that you keep hearing now and then.
Oh, it's over.
Yeah, pretty much. So, well, I want to get into that. More media outrage involving Richard Sherman, and we have Seattle media telling us why we shouldn't be fans of our own team. And and then we can talk about where we go from here just as a show in the off season. And I want to get into that as well.
Okay, cool.
Well, before we get into this Atlanta Falcon loss, let's talk about, Adam, about the idea of the window closing, because you talked about it with just now with the Patriots.
Yeah.
They had several years where they, as far as they made it, was the divisional round. I really liked Hong Kong Hawk, Dave Bloomquist. He posted on Twitter the list of NFL quarterbacks who have made the playoffs and won a playoff game their first five seasons. It was a really long list. Actually, it wasn't a long list at all. It was just Russell Wilson.
Really?
Oh, Russell Wilson, the only quarterback to win a playoff game in his first five seasons. And so when I hear people questioning whether or not the Seahawks window has closed, I wonder why are they thinking that way? We still have Cam Chancellor under contract. We still have Earl Thomas under contract. We still have Russell Wilson under contract. Doug Baldwin signed last year. There's so many of the core guys to this team. And yet you're going to ask the question of whether or not the window's closed.
I'm surprised you're even asking the question, Brandon. I mean, I've been reading all these articles and it's clear the window is not only closed, it is slammed shut. There's no way that this team will ever make the playoffs ever again. Not with, you know, these players and these coaches and this GM that have a track record of sustained success. No, there's no possible way that they could do it again. I mean, just like you said, they have too many guys that are still in the primes of their career coming back to participate in the next year. They, you know, they've got another draft to go through to acquire more talent. Like, that's not going to help. And, you know, and then they've got this franchise quarterback guy. And I mean, look, most teams, when they have one of those, they go back to the playoffs with some regularity, but this one won't. I mean, he's too short.
He spends a day of the week at the children's hospital every week. If he's so distracted by helping kids every week, when's he going to take time to actually learn how to play football better?
Exactly. And I mean, it's his fault that the offensive line stunk for the year. And yeah, it's pretty clear that this team has no shot. And that's really the narrative that you would get if you read all of these national stories, all of these writers that are so disconnected from this franchise. That's the feeling that you would get. And I find it astounding. And I think where it comes from is you look at teams in their normal ebb and flow, their normal rise and fall. They're usually in 3 to 4 year kind of cycles. You know, you have a peak and then a valley, peak and a valley. And the good ones can find a peak again about every 4 or 5 years or so. What writers on the national level can't wrap their little pea brains around is the idea that there's a team that can have sustained success over a decade because they hit on some amazing draft picks in the early part of their rebuilding process. And those young guys were re-signed on top of that. And so you have a 10-year window. Like, that's something that they can't wrap their little heads around. It's just mind blown. Not in the salary cap era. That can't possibly happen.
Right. And I think that goes to show you a little bit why Pete Carroll's model, the fact that he spent so much time in college and he knows how to rebuild and reload with young players every, you know, 3-4 years. That, to me, we're seeing that play out now that he's kind of had that initial bit of success and players have moved on, and now you have, you know, your core guys signed and you're having to rebuild through young players. And so far I'm thinking that it's looking like we're doing that pretty well.
You know, one thing that I took away from Pete's, you know, end of the game press conference was the idea that this doesn't feel like the end of this process, that we're just right in the middle of it. And you heard Russell kind of in his press conference, like, reference back to this feels a lot like 5 years ago when we were leaving Atlanta with a loss last time, that we felt like we were on the come up, not the come down. And when I look at this team compared to last year's team and you start looking for a trend, doesn't this team feel like a more complete team than the year previous? And doesn't it feel like there's some obvious and really fairly easy fixes that could be made to the team even next year that would build on what has happened over this last year? Because I feel like this really is a team in the middle of the process and on the come up of yet another swing. I mean, the year after the Super Bowl loss was definitely going to be your low point.
Yeah.
Just look at the Carolina Panthers. That tells you just how hard it is to rebound as a franchise
this year.
The Broncos this year. And the Niners from a couple years ago. I mean, yeah. And this team is still right in the mix. Yeah, they are definitely on the upswing. And again, you just have too many guys still in the prime of their careers.
Well, let's get into this recap with the Atlanta Falcons from last week. The Seahawks go into Atlanta what could have been the last game in the Georgia Dome, but they take the loss 36-20. Since it was a loss, we do have someone taking the blame, Angela. Okay. Angela writes in, two reasons we lost the game that I needed to take responsibility for. One, the safety. Just before the ball was snapped, I said out loud, they could easily get a safety here. And two, for reasons known but to the gods, I dug out an I'm in 12 sign that we got when we bought a jersey in 2013, the year of the best Super Bowl ever. I thought of it yesterday morning, dug it out, dusted it off, and put it on the mantle right next to my Russell Wilson voodoo doll altar. A breach of protocol I can neither explain nor defend. My bad.
Well, I don't know. I think the idea that you're trying to pull out some extra magic, Angela, like, I get that. I don't know that that was, you know, by bringing the flag out, I don't know that that was a breach of protocol. Although you are trying something new in the playoffs, so I do get that.
Right. I can see how that would be concerning, but we can definitely pin that safety on Angela.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's definitely not the fact that Odhiambo took a weird step back out of a stance.
No.
Yeah. Definitely Angela's fault.
It was the jinx.
Hey, and not only that, but I give her a lot of credit for stepping up and taking the blame.
I do, really too. It's tough to take, though. She was the only one that took any sort of blame in the playoffs. So kudos to her.
She womaned up. She really did. Yeah, I'm impressed.
But yes, the Seahawks did exactly what we wanted them to do, right? An incredible first drive. They took, 8 minutes off the clock as they just marched down the field. They had a couple third downs. They made a third down and one, you know, a short yardage run where Thomas Rawls picked up 2 yards. It felt like this is exactly what we needed from this team to start with and to hang with a team like the Atlanta Falcons, who are a high scoring offense.
Yeah, that was basically the script, right? The idea that you have long sustained drives. I mean, they chewed up over half of the quarter on the initial drive, and then you actually punch it in rather than settling for a field goal. And you ran the ball down their throat the entire drive. Man, that really did feel like, hey, we could be in a good spot here. Now, the one thing that was a little bit of a bummer is the idea that we started out with the ball and we didn't get to defer.
Well, when you lose the coin toss, you don't have an option.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It's a bummer. I would have rather had it the other way. But if that's how you got to start the game on offense on the road, that's a hot start. We talked about slow starts, and this game was the exact opposite. They started fast and then faded down the stretch. And you know, going into the second quarter, I still felt dang good about this game. I thought we were hanging right in it.
Oh, well, the second quarter, I go back to the Seahawks' second drive. You had a huge catch by Paul Richardson that we thought might even be a touchdown because he got up and ran it toward the end zone. And on the replay, you saw that he got touched, which fine. But then immediately right after that, we start to see some of the problems that we are going to see throughout this game. Right after that big catch by Richardson, Ifedi gets burned by a stunt, and it's 2nd and 17 after Russell just gets blown up by Brooks Reed, who had,
wasn't it Odhiambo that got smoked on the,
no,
on
that
the...
was before Odhiambo went out. This is when Ifedi was still in there.
Oh, okay.
And, but yeah, then they come back from that, you know, he hits Jimmy Graham over the middle and then on third down, Russell overthrows Baldwin, on that kind of the fade to the back corner of the end zone.
And he missed three big throws to Doug Baldwin through the game. Yeah. There was a touchdown in the third quarter he could have had that he ended up kind of throwing it out the back of the end zone. He was maybe throwing it up to Jimmy, but Baldwin had come open. And then there was a bomb down the right hand side too that he just missed.
Yeah,
man, that's how close you are to this game being a completely different ball game.
And going back and watching the coach's tape on that too, on that third down play to Baldwin, Russell had Jimmy wide open in the middle of the field for a touchdown on that play.
Well, I mean, he had Doug too. He could have if he just throws a more accurate ball, it's touchdown too. So. Right. You know, pick your touchdown, I guess. You still got to throw the ball.
He wouldn't have had to be as accurate throwing to Jimmy is my only concern. Because Doug was double covered. I mean, there were two guys there, but he was open.
He was open. But here's the thing. Baldwin was clearly his first read. So if you go read one open, you throw the ball.
Right.
You don't go, he's open. Maybe there's a guy a little more open.
Well, if you had an offensive line that could protect them, maybe you would think that.
No, you wouldn't. No. If you're an NFL caliber quarterback and a top five type quarterback in this league, you see one dude open and you're throwing the ball.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, touchdown. You know, that's how that goes.
So it could have been the Seahawks up 14-7 at that point. Instead, they settle for the field goal, and their red zone issues on the road continue, and it's 10-7. It's important to remember that, because we have an email here talking about the turning point in this game being the Kevin Pierre-Lewis hold. And from John Davison says, "Hi, fellas. Sunday morning and waking up and realizing it's all over for the season is not a nice feeling. There was a distinct possibility that we could do it, but I always had that still small voice that wakes you up and you think, oh no, we can't. However, we played hard and we stuck at it right to the bitter end, but I think there is no doubt that the best team won. I was so pleased we came out of the traps fast, but we peaked early, and I think the turning point was Hester's return was nullified by Kevin Pierre-Lewis's penalty. The O-line struggled too after that, and they were getting through showing us the potential of a Fetty, perhaps. So, what about the season? Well, like Adam, I was convinced we were going to the Super Bowl. The pluses for me were the catching of Paul Richardson, especially in the playoffs, and hope he can go on and be a legitimate threat next year and not another Chris Matthews. Another plus was Justin Britt at center, and as mentioned, the possibility of a Fetty. So now the O-line can have an offseason of learning their trade, and maybe they come back improved. But an addition or two in free agency and or the draft won't come amiss. All in all, it's not been a bad season, and I'm sure a Browns fan would swap in a minute. In the end, the injuries were just slowly ground us down, and I'm sure the front office are putting together a plan. Another two games, and I rooting for no one. Hawks are bust.
Yeah.
Go Hawks, from John Davison.
Well, I mean, he brings up the Kevin Pierre-Lewis penalty on the Hester return, and I think most people after the game pointed to that play as being the turning point. And I think, you know, you can legitimately make a case for that. But
you can,
for me,
because after the safety, you know, the defense, they held the Falcons to a field goal. And then so that,
well, put, the safety came after the KPL penalty.
Right. The safety came, and then they had to kick it back to the Falcons, and then the Falcons got a field goal. So that put them up 12-10.
Right.
And as I mentioned before, you know, if the Seahawks score rather than settling for a field goal, then it could be 14-12 Seahawks, and they're still in the lead after that whole disastrous bit of the with the 2 points. But
yeah, well, yeah,
I think you're right. I think the KPL penalty was significant, but I don't think it was the true turning point.
No, because to me, the true turning point was the injury of a Fetty. That to me was when that whole game changed, because the Seahawks offense had moved it up and down the field up until Fetty's injury. Then comes Odhiambo. He plays well for a couple snaps, and then the Atlanta Falcons start playing games up front. They start running twists. They start running stunts. And that's when it all fell apart, because when your thinnest position group loses one of its five and you have to put in somebody who's even thinner in talent in Odhiambo, and that little bit of communication that you have on the road that they struggle with so mightily is now gone in the rhythm of it. You saw it was right after that. We stopped running the ball. Russell started having to run for his life. And I really felt like that was the turning point in the game, because it looked like the Seahawks offense was going to be able to go up and down the field more or less at will for the rest of the game. And that injury, to me, combined that with the KPL penalty, because, yeah, instead of, you know, being basically, what was it, on the Atlanta 20 and knocking on the door to kick another field goal, you're backed up to your own one, give up a safety, have to punt kick, you know, the free kick for the safety, and you set them up with excellent field position. They're going to get points there no matter what. That's like a 20-point swing almost when it's all said and done.
Yeah, it wasn't that they were that backed up, though, because I think they were on, well, they were inside the 10 after the penalty, and then they ran it to Rawls, and Rawls got like a minus three. And then Wilson fell back into the end zone. They were on the 4 yard line. It was just that, you know, he fell
backward. 4 yard line is freaking backed up. Anything from the 10 down is backed up.
Oh,
big
yeah.
Time.
No, I agree. It's just that
it was basically an 80 yard difference in field position.
Right.
When it was all said.
Oh, yeah.
And done.
No, I agree. It was a huge swing. But, you know, I don't even think it was necessarily a Fetty going out that was the turning point for me.
That's the biggest one for me, easily.
For me, when the Seahawks got the ball back after the Falcons went up 12-10, Seattle went three and out. You know, Baldwin was just 1 yard short of getting that first down on like a third and three. And then so they had to punt it. Well, John Ryan booted it. It rolled, you know, 60 yards all the way down to the 1 yard line. Nico Thorpe was there to make just a great play to pin the Falcons. It was just about inside the 1 yard line. Mm-hmm. But then the Falcons went 99 yards on that drive for a touchdown. And to me, that was the killer for this defense. Seeing the defense just get smoked down the field. You know, they gave up 2 third downs on that drive, I think. It just, they couldn't get off the field. And the reason why it made such a difference to me, it was like the Seahawks didn't even know what to do afterward. They had 53 seconds left on the clock when they got the ball back. They had 3 timeouts and they just ran the ball twice going into halftime, you know, down 19 to 10.
Yeah. And I'm not surprised at that point when your offensive line had struggled as much as it had. What do you get? You're going to go and compound this and make it even worse going into halftime. We saw the Seahawks gamble in the close to halftime last time they played the Falcons in the divisional championship round and, you know, end up losing points right at the end. I mean, they could have gotten points right at the end of that half and yet screw the whole thing up and, you know, go into half feeling a little deflated. So I understand that. I think the idea of that 99-yard drive, there's something to that. The idea that they went 3 and out just before that, I mean, again, that speaks to the Ifedity injury to me. I mean, they were moving the ball, and then suddenly they totally abandoned the run come second quarter on. And we barely saw Thomas Rawls do anything from that point forward. And I think that's something that I could bang on Daryl Bevel a little bit because it had been effective, and it did look good early. And it would have kept the Falcons offense off the field even more. You know, you go 3 and out and you're a little bit gassed as a defense, and then they start stringing together a long drive. When you're thin at a few positions, you know, safety and corner, it gets tough to stop them as they go down the field.
Well, and see, for the defense in the third quarter, they still couldn't get it down on third down. They had 2 opportunities because the Falcons, because they deferred, they come out after the half. The defense should be rested by then, right? They all had time to rest after the half. Mm-hmm. And again, the Falcons marched down the field. They happened to get them into 2 third and longs. They had 1 third and 8 and 1 third and 10. They're down 26-10 before the Seahawks even get the ball for the first time in the third quarter.
Yeah, that was tough. You really did need a stop on that drive. There's no doubt about it. You know, one of the things that really stood out to me throughout the entire game was the way that the Seahawks were dominated in the trenches, whether that's defensive line or offensive line. I mean, clearly the offensive line had its struggles, but I definitely felt disappointed in the amount of pressure that was put on Matt Ryan. I mean, I know everybody's going to point at Jeremy Lane and Deshaun Shedd and even Sherman and talk about how the corners couldn't hold up. And the no Earl Thomas made a big deal, of course, a big difference and was a big deal. But I really felt like it was the lack of pass rush on Matt Ryan and the lack of pass protection for the Seahawks that really was the undoing of this team when it was all said and done. They need another pass rusher or two.
Well, Brett and Sidney definitely agree as he sent an email saying, after watching the Seahawks playoff loss to Atlanta, it was apparent to me that the failure of the pass rush to put pressure on Matt Ryan was the main reason we lost. Say what you want about the O-line, injuries, and bad penalties. The Hawks could not get the ball off the Falcons and stop them from scoring. Are the Falcons really that good, or are we in serious need of an upgrade in the pass rush for next season? I think part of it really is the Falcons are that good.
Yeah, that I think that's part of it. Their offensive line really came together as the season went on. They were clearly a better unit this last Sunday than they were the first time that we faced them. They've come together and they are a better unit. There's no doubt about it. So you go up against a very good pass blocking offensive line, and I mean they got some pressure. I mean the defensive line didn't play a terrible game.
Yeah.
By any stretch. I mean, I don't want to paint it in that kind of light, but I had really come to expect the type of performance that I saw early in the year against Atlanta when it came to the pass rush, and especially with the addition of Frank Clark.
And part of that could be, too. I mean, Dan Quinn's a heck of a coach, and so he would be able to coach those guys up against the Seahawks defensive line, too.
Now, another thing, give Atlanta some credit for, the receivers made some really outstanding catches. I mean, Gabriel had a couple really tough catches that were contested, or like he had to make a huge adjustment on one back shoulder throw towards the left sideline. I mean, he made some monster catches. Sanu made a couple really tough contested catches. The touchdown he scored, I thought Lane actually had very good coverage. Look, it's just sometimes the way the rules are today, good offense is going to beat good defense if you can do it consistently enough. Now, great defense will beat great offense.
Right.
But if you're just going to have two good matchups, the way the rule book is today, offense has the advantage. And they took advantage. And really, the little bit of pressure we did get on Matt Ryan, give him some credit. He was able to move around in the pocket and sidestep and do some of those things and not get rattled, which was impressive to me. That's not something that I've seen him do with consistency throughout his career. So, you know, the other thing about all this too, Brandon, when I look back on it, I feel like this is a very different game if you play it in the clink, because we talked about that, you know, kind of series of unfortunate events with the hold on the Hester return and then the safety and how all that snowballed real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And think about how much energy the crowd had after that and the team had after that. It was huge. Now, that happens at the clink. That you don't get that kind of surge if you're the Falcons and the Seahawks. You're maybe able to withstand that a little bit more.
Well, we talked about it coming into this game, how difficult it had the Seahawks had put themselves into a position by not, you know, winning one of the Arizona games, you know, on unmakeable field goals, or, you know, winning the Rams game early in the season when it was so tight. I mean, you had plenty of opportunities for this to be a home game.
It was right there. That number two seed was right there going into the down the stretch last few weeks. And yeah, you got to win those. You got to win those games.
And even still, doesn't it burn you up to know that had the Seahawks won that game, the NFC championship round would still have been played in Seattle?
I know. I mean, the Packers did their end of the bargain, and we could have easily been at the NFC championship game right now, Brandon,
right,
as we speak, as we do this podcast. But wasn't meant to be. And once you got down as big as they did, like you said, with the Falcons scoring on that very first drive of the second half, basically, you weren't going to run the ball anymore. The Falcons were able to pin their ears back on the pass rush. It just made it too tough on Russell Wilson and company at that point, even with Paul Richardson playing out of his mind.
Right. Yeah. Even 26-10, they get the ball, the first possession, and the Falcons even bailed them out by, you know, lining up incorrectly and because the Seahawks were punting, and so they got the free first down. And still drove it into the red zone and again could not get it into the end zone. And a part of that was the pass rush was just, I mean, Russell had no time to throw.
No time. And, you know, that's one thing that I wanted to focus on a little bit too regarding this game. On 46% of Russell's dropbacks in this game, he was under pressure.
46%.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's too much.
That's way too much. And he still had a dang good game. I understand he had two picks. One was in a desperation mode, and the other was a bobble, I guess, where Luke Wilson caught it, hits the ground, then it pops out and goes to one of the Falcons defenders. Somehow that's still an interception. That's fine. Whatever.
Well, the ball never hit the ground, and Wilson
Luke Wilson did when he had it.
Right. Well, he didn't complete the catch.
Well, then it's not an interception.
If it didn't hit the ground.
Look, he did complete the catch. He had the ball in his hands and he's on his back on the ground. I don't know what else you need.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of controversy around that, but
and the officiating as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, 7 penalties on the Seahawks for a quadrillion yards. The Falcons the Falcons literally had 2 penalties, one in each were 5-yard penalties.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if they were going to get a flag thrown them all game. Yeah. I really didn't.
Holding was not an issue in this game.
No, that was
totally
legit.
I don't know if a single holding penalty got called on either team. Well, defensive holding on Richard Sherman when Julio was face masking him.
Right, yeah, well, that's fine. Yeah, Julio can just jerk him down by the face mask and like Sherman just trying to keep his feet, he gets called for the hold.
Yeah.
That's cute. There's a lot of the officiating, and again, home games. This is why you want home games.
Well, see, at home, you can hold the guy's face mask while you catch a touchdown with the other with the other hand, and it counts. Yeah,
exactly. I just didn't think. I mean, I find it hard to believe that Atlanta played that clean of a game all the way through.
Right.
I just do. And I'm not saying that's why we lost by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh, no.
Not even close.
No.
I'm just saying it, that was a frustrating aspect of this game was as it went down. No doubt about it.
No. And as you mentioned, Atlanta clearly, and when it came to the offensive and defensive line, they had it worked out. So let's go on to one more email here. One from Brandon in San Diego said, I don't know what to say. I almost expected this to happen, but still held out hope that in the 11th hour, we would come together and pull it out and get to the Super Bowl. It's just disappointing it had to come to an end like this. It just hurts more the further you get into the playoffs. I didn't want to feed into or believe the hype, but there was just something off this year about the team. I know they say all the time they love so-and-so guy or that's my brother, but the brotherhood and bond seemed lost among the players and coaches. I did have a couple of questions for you guys. One, do you see Jimmy Graham back next season or do we cut him to save $10 million in cap space? Two, do Bevel and or Cable make a return to Renton this year? I just want to thank you, Brandon and Adam, for giving me hope and a new perspective on the team this season, for letting me and other 12s vent on your show. It was very therapeutic, especially after a roller coaster of a season this was. You guys have a great show and provide an excellent service to the 12s. I believe the Hawks right the ship this offseason and we get back to the dance. Looking forward to more content to come. And as always, go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Brandon. And the point is that you have an awesome show. See, that's kind of the deal, right? Like the idea that we try to get all your emails in. We try to let you guys have your voice on this because this should be your show at the end of the day. This is by 12s for 12s. That's the entire point. So we appreciate you writing in, man. First, I don't know how you feel about the Jimmy Graham thing, Brandon, but if you don't bring Jimmy Graham back, you're dumb as
catfish.
And I'll tell you why. He finished the season this year with 65 catches for 923 yards. He averaged over 14 yards a catch and 6 touchdowns. And we could easily up that touchdown rate going into the season. He was the number 2 receiver on this team. As much as we lament, hey, we never get the ball to Jimmy Graham, that's a huge season out of a tight end in a Seahawks offense.
Yeah, that's your number 3 performance in the NFL by a tight end.
Right. So
$10 million for that kind of output, that's meeting your value model, I think.
Absolutely. He earned every penny of his contract. I'm fine with the money on it. You got to keep Jimmy. You got to keep Jimmy. It just makes sense to me.
I agree. No, this was his 4th best season in his career as a tight end. So right in the middle there. And, you know, 2 of those were with Drew Brees throwing 5,000 yards, you know, his 2011 season.
Yeah, video game offense.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I found funny, Brandon, is I was looking at just yards per game today.
Yeah.
And this year, this Seahawks team averaged something like 370-odd-some yards per game on offense. That was more than the 2005 Super Bowl Matt Hasselbeck-led team.
Holy smokes. You're kidding.
No. And that was an offensive-centric team.
Yeah.
I went back and looked at a lot of the numbers when you compared them over the years, and the offense under Pete Carroll has been more prolific than the offense under Mike Holmgren.
Wow. Okay. We're going to have to get into more of this in the offseason. And
yeah,
you know, you mentioned Brandon and it being, you know, the show of people who listen and really this last week with all of the listener emails that came in, this was such a huge week for people emailing into the show. And it was one of the cool things I know for us, because having to prepare for the show, you're hitting all of the points that we wanted to get to, and to get your perspective on it too. I think it's what will help carry it into the offseason too.
Oh, big time. Your guys' participation throughout the offseason will be essential, because it's hard. I'm not going to lie. It's hard to do this through the offseason. So if you guys can, you know, keep it up with the emails and all of your suggestions and topics that you want covered, that makes it so much easier for us to do it through the difficult time of the season. Cause I'm not going to lie, it's a real chore. it's a real chore, especially when the weather starts getting nice.
When the weather starts getting nice. I know that gets hard.
Yeah. Yeah. I can be on the river riding the motorcycle. You know what I mean? I got catfish. I could be doing. So, we appreciate it a lot. I think the other thing you brought up was the idea of Bevel and Cable, whether they'll be back in renting this next year. And I think that's an emphatic yes. It looks as though Cable had pulled out of the 49ers process. It's smart by him. I don't know why you'd want to get involved in that organization with that ownership group. And then Daryl Bevel obviously didn't get a lot of looks this year at head coaching positions, and they're pretty much all of them have been filled up. So I would see them both back with the Seahawks next year.
Yeah, I would agree. Cable, you know, whether or not he just realized that Kyle Shanahan was going to be their first pick, and for as far as coaches go, and decided to back out at that point. But yes, it does look like Cable will be back. And, you know, Pete, you just mentioned this is a more prolific offense than the 2005 Seahawks.
Yeah.
You're not going to get rid of Daryl Bevel.
No, no, he's terrible. Remember, everybody wants to fire him. Again, that's one of those things when you start going back and you look, you go, really? This is a true fact. And it's a true fact.
I mean,
Russell Wilson, the level of quarterback play since 1990, if you look just straight at passer rating, Russell Wilson has been higher than every other quarterback in every one of his year as a starter, except for this year. Matt Hasselbeck was 3 points higher in his QB rating in 2005 when he was a legitimate MVP candidate.
Wow. So why aren't we talking about this and instead in the media? Why is the Seahawks...
Because the window's closed, Brandon.
The window's closed. The Seahawks are a difficult team to like. You know, with all of this postseason garbage in the media, do we have to remind people why they're fans of this team? If it takes us all offseason, Adam, I think that's what we have to do. Because if you're in Seattle, your local media, your local reporters covering your team right now are telling you all the reasons why you shouldn't like this team. They're telling you why the window's closing. I mean, do they even watch the team? If that's the coverage that you're going to get from your local media, then I think it's time to move on. If you have friends that are reading this stuff in the Seattle area and feel their fandom slipping away, let them know that Adam and I are here for you all off season long.
Well, yeah, because the idea too is, look, I think we give you guys a straight spit for the most part. I don't feel like we sugarcoat too much. And I mean, of course, there's going to be some homerism. I mean, this is a Seahawks podcast, for God's sake. But for the most part, I feel like we're fairly realistic when we look at these things, and we'll bang on guys when they're not doing a good job. But, you know, if you're a local beat reporter and you're looking at the way this team is constructed, the kind of talent that's going to be there for the next 2 to 3 years, and you're saying the window is shut, like, what team are you watching? I can't understand. They were only a few. I understand the score seems to be indicative of a different story, but in this last game, we were only a few plays that were there to be made away from winning that game on the road in Atlanta. Just don't hold KPL. Just hit Doug Baldwin for a couple touchdowns, Russell Wilson. Like, I mean, the plays were right there.
Oh, yeah. If in the third quarter, if you are 3 for 3 inside the red zone, even allow the safety to happen, allow the Falcons their points. If you are 3 for 3 inside the red zone, it's 26 to 21 in the third quarter.
Yeah.
And that's within reach.
And you're right there.
Yeah.
And maybe you're still running the ball and you're keeping the offense off the field. And you know what I mean? Like, all those little things that add up.
Right.
And when you start getting behind a big time offense like that, yeah, it can pile on like that. But anyways, that's kind of my point. And what I don't understand is when you look at that game and you say, okay, there was no Earl Thomas in that game, and we went from being about the sixth defense against the pass with Earl Thomas in there to about the 30th ranked team with Earl Thomas out of there.
Yeah.
And you say, no, the window's shut. Well, how's the window shut? We get Earl Thomas back next year.
Right.
I mean, and that's a break that you can come back from fairly easily as far as the leg injury is concerned. I mean, we're not talking about a patella tendon tear like Jimmy Graham had, yet he still came back. So I don't understand that mentality. Now, the writer that wrote the article about the Seahawks seeming a little more unlikable these days, I can kind of see where he's coming from in some aspects. I can't.
Well, Michael Bennett, after the game, you know, going off on the local reporter, definitely didn't help any. I mean, Bill Wixie's a likable guy. And if you haven't heard about it, you've probably heard about it by now. But Bill Wixie asked him about, you know, the defensive line's performance in the game. And I can understand why Mike Bennett would take that personally, being a defensive lineman. And, you know, people are saying, oh, well, you know, it was a question that was kind of benign. Michael Bennett has been looking forward to going to the Super Bowl all season long. He knows that his brother is on the Patriots and is probably going to the Super Bowl, and had that in his mind all year long that he wanted to play in the Super Bowl against his brother. And then Bill Wixie comes in and he asks him the question about the defensive line performance. And it probably wasn't the sole reason why they lost this game. It was a big part of why. But he went off and, you know, essentially said, you know, what have you done in your life? Well, Mike probably didn't know that Bill overcame cancer and that sort of thing. He didn't know. So he was just in the emotions after the game. You expect players to be emotional.
How old is Michael Bennett?
Well, he should know better.
Well, that's kind of my point. So one of the things, like when I was younger, I had a girlfriend where things like went terribly towards the end. And like, I totally lost my temper and said some things to her that were just mean and nasty. And then there's no coming back from that, right? Because once those words come out of your mouth, like they have an effect and you can, and you're speaking solely from emotion and it's raw and it's just not good. And then as I got older, I realized that there's a way, even in your toughest moments when you're feeling extremely emotional and you're upset and you're hurt and maybe some dreams are being dashed, that you can still have a conversation like an adult and you can express your disappointment, but it doesn't have to be like a 3-year-old child. And the idea that Mike Bennett went off on this reporter, is Mike Bennett an amateur football player or a professional football player?
He's a professional.
He's a professional football player. Part of being a professional is handling yourself like a professional. And I get that he's quirky and he likes to joke around and all that stuff, but he's in his 30s now. He's been around the block and he is a professional and he needs to rein it in. Like that's unacceptable. That really, the way that he reacted is unacceptable. And yeah, there's a degree of unlikability to that. I get where the writer's coming from on that point.
Well, Matt Calkins was the writer for Seattle Times, and I did post it on the Facebook page just to know that that sentiment is out there. And my point about this is, though, that the media tends to focus on all the negative stuff. And you can see it. You can read it word for word in this article about all of the negative stuff is all front loaded in this article. And then at the very bottom, oh, by the way, you know, there's some nice stories here, too. But that's not what right. We're focusing on. We're focusing on all the negative stuff, which is what the media tends to do.
Well, they tend to focus on whatever it is supports their little opinion argument that they're going to make rather than coming to you like Walter Cronkite and saying, here's the news, giving it to you. You know, they come at you with everything is infotainment now. It's not information. It's infotainment. Exactly like this podcast is. I mean, I'm not claiming that we're completely different, but at least we try to at least bring you like actual factual stuff. And yeah, that's what this writer did. He front loaded. He tries to write an opinion piece and ruffle some feathers, get some readership. And hey, look, it worked.
Well, there were some people that did agree with some points, too. And you don't want to have those instances of Michael Bennett moments.
It's a bad look.
Yeah, it's a bad look. And you don't want to have, as a fan, you don't want to be disappointed in your team and how they these outbursts throughout the season. And Lars Berger, right. He posted on the Facebook page, a buddy of ours from high school.
Yeah. Oh, man, I haven't heard from Lars in forever. Yeah, I hope he's doing awesome, man. Yeah,
I hope so, too. He's in the Seattle area, and he said this was a tough read. And while there are valid points being made, I feel it could have been spun differently, especially being it was coming out of Hawk Nation. Use the article to build spirit instead of taking cheap shots at a passionate team and fan base. It was a tough year for Seattle, both the team and for the 12s. It was a year of questionable play calling, odd decisions and personnel changes, as well as a brash of injuries. It's obvious all this took a toll on the mental health of the team and fans. Even the energy at home games felt different this year. It felt disconnected. Our poise was disrupted, and at times it was apparent that we were coming apart, and I don't think we ever really pulled it all back together this season. We are a very excitable team, very outspoken, and very physical. I feel all those are great qualities and are what make this team so great to watch and be a part of. We need to get back to the basics, though, back to what makes our team so great. We need to get the team mentality back. We win as a team and lose as a team. When we are cohesive, we are unstoppable. We still have it. We are still great. Our boys just need to get back to having fun. Go Hawks. Already looking forward to next season.
Yeah, I guess the one place I disagree with Lars just a little bit is the idea that, this article came from Hawk Nation and like you got to build spirit and all that. Look, I don't mind people calling out the team for what and who they are at times. In fact, I guess I'm less bothered by this article that the Seahawks are unlikable and more bothered by the articles that the windows closed.
Yeah.
Because I feel like at least the one about, you know, the team feeling a little more unlikable, you can give me some stuff that I can say, okay, I can at least see where you're coming from. But as far as the window being closed, like that feels like just a narrative that doesn't have a lot of actual facts to back it up. And while this may have been a down year, and when I say that, it sounds hilarious when it comes out of my mouth, there's a lot of room for this team to improve again this next year and be in the mix. Because look, the injury bug did hit this team really hard this year. Really hard.
Yeah.
At key moments, at key positions. And look, there's just not a lot of teams that can overcome that. No, really, I don't know a one.
And Russell Wilson still threw for a career best in yards.
Yeah. Behind the worst offensive line of his career.
Right. Now, the thing that bothers me about this is characterizing it, though, as the team being unlikable. Because the team is unlikable only if you focus on a couple of players on the team that you don't like.
Yeah, the loud ones that get focused on in the media.
Well,
of course, that's going to feel like the voice of the team.
Well, it is, right. Because you're not focusing on, you know, guys that, you know, Cliff Avril with the Homes for Haiti thing all season, you know, Russell Wilson and his charity efforts and going to Seattle Children's and, you know, Thomas Rawls, you know, with all he's done to bring the attention to Flint, Michigan and the issues they've had there. There are so many different things that you could focus on.
Or even just the charity work of Bennett and Sherman themselves.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I mean, look. Yeah. Again, I kind of panned Bennett for his reaction. And in that specific instance, yeah, I think he can do better. Overall, do I think he's a bad dude?
No.
No, I don't think he's a bad dude. Sherman acted like a diva this year. Do I think he's a bad dude? No, I think he's actually a really good dude. But, you know, this year got the better of him. And I don't know, maybe it's playing through quote unquote injury. I don't know. But he definitely... He was definitely a little more bombastic this year than usual.
Well, and that's where the other bit of outrage came in this last week, right? Pete Carroll said Monday after the game that Richard Sherman played with an MCL injury for most of the season.
Did he? Yeah.
No way. I mean, come on.
How many games did he get lifted out of after injuring that knee?
When did the injury even happen? Nobody can point to it because he never came out of the game because of an injury.
Right. And how many practices did he miss because of this knee injury?
Well, apparently
none.
How
many braces did he wear on his knee throughout the season?
I feel like if you're injured that badly for an MCL that you would probably have a knee brace on.
This smells like BS to me. This smells like giant BS to me. I don't think he played through an MCL injury all year. That would be my guess. Now, again, that's a tough thing to say about somebody you really like, you know, as a player and everything.
Sherman never said anything about it. Pete was the only one that said anything about it. And you have to wonder, is that just him covering up for some of Richard Sherman's reactions this year? Saying
and
that he was playing through
play
some things.
A little bit. Yeah. I don't know, man. I have a hard time. That falls under the that doesn't ring true column for me. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Let's say the knee was injured in some kind of manner. And one of the things was the NFL got rid of the probable designation for injuries this year. Mm-hmm. So if he didn't miss any practices due to an injury, he wasn't injured enough to be listed as questionable, then he's not going to be on any injury report.
No, that's not how it works. Even though Russell Wilson is probable or is.
He had to come out of the game, though, for his injuries.
Whatever. That doesn't make a difference on whether or not you report the injury. The whole point is that you can be. Is slated to play, active and ready to go. What's the designation for playing? Is it active?
I guess.
Or
you're just not on the injury report.
No, you're still on. That's the thing. You're still on the injury report. Jimmy Graham, knee, but still active, going to play. Hmm. You're still on the injury report. You're just not listed as out. You can be injured and guaranteed to play, and you have to list that injury if there's an injury. Because all those dudes in Vegas, they want to know who's healthy and not. And the NFL wants to make sure that those guys get to know that so that everybody gets their money and everybody gets their cut.
It's all about Vegas, isn't it?
Oh, in this aspect, yeah. Big time it is.
So why did the Colts not get punished at all for Andrew Luck not being on the injury report last season?
With the shoulder?
Yeah.
Beats the heck out of me?
Why do you look at that and you go, shrug?
Well, I mean, I look at it and shrug because at the end of the day, I don't gamble on these games. So
I don't care.
I mean, it's not affecting my life in a huge way, one way or the other. Now, as far as whether or not the Seahawks get punished for this, this falls under unlikely for me.
Prove it. Well, and the NFL apparently is looking into it. As we saw the tweet from Chris Mortensen saying that
When's the last time he's reported on anything credible, by the way?
That's a really good point. That's why I put in the comment about the 11 to 12 deflated footballs that didn't turn out to be a correct tweet as well. But saying that the Seahawks could lose up to a second round draft pick there. And the good thing about this is if we did lose our second round draft pick because of it, we get our fifth round draft pick back. So at least it wouldn't be too. Yeah, that's apparently what was reported.
I don't know that that's how that works, but that'd be cool, I guess.
Well, the point being is that the Seahawks, you know, because they have broken rules to this point with their offseason practices, that this is a compounding on top of previous violations. And so they're totally different violations, which is why it makes no sense. But because it's another violation is why it would go from the fifth round being taken away for a second round being taken away and not an additional pick. Because you can't take another second round pick on top of a fifth round pick and say that violation, when every other team that had done this before had only gotten fined, or in the case of the Colts, no punishment at all.
Right.
And now you're taking away a high round draft pick. That's really weird.
It ain't happening. This ain't happening. In fact, I guarantee you in a month's time, everybody will have forgotten about this entire story.
Yeah. It was interesting listening to Mike Florio after he spent the first half of a first hour railing on the Seahawks for violating a rule that may not have even been violated yet. Antonio Brown violates a rule about broadcasting locker room footage on social media, and Florio discards that one like it's no big deal. So yeah, he broke that rule, but it's a stupid rule.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's hilarious to me. And again, Steelers are a public team. Antonio Brown's everybody loves them. Some AB. Like, I get it. I mean, if you don't think the media has their favorites, I mean,
I like Antonio Brown too. I didn't think that was a big deal either.
Oh, I think it's a big deal in the sense of if he's on my team and he does that, I'm very upset. Now, as far as it being like something the league needs to crack down on, I mean, give me a break. I mean, there's a lot of other things. I mean, but then again, they give a crap about half a PSI in a football. And, you know, exactly.
But they spent $5 million on that investigation. They had to get something out of that $5
million. Yeah, exactly. Well, and then the thing is, they didn't spend $5 million investigating Greg Hardy to see, you know, about him chucking his girlfriend on a couch full of guns and beating the hell out of her.
Yeah.
Yeah. The league office is asinine.
Why don't we care about things we should care about?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get it.
All right, Adam. Well, I think that does it. After the break, what do you say we talk about what to kind of look forward to in this offseason and take some more email?
Sounds like a plan, man.
And we're back. The Seahawkers podcast is the official podcast of the official booster club of the Seattle Seahawks. Let's see. We're going to get into some reviews. We're going to get into your email. We're going to talk about some of the things we're looking forward to doing in the offseason. Before we get there, though, Adam, why don't we take a look at the Pick'em League? Because I know I'm ahead of you, which is cool.
Yeah. Got me by 20 points, man. Congratulations. I shouldn't have forgotten to pick games. That probably would have helped.
Well, you know, I could have not changed some picks here and there that would have gotten me more points, too. We can look back at all the moves and say
whatever,
we could have done
better.
If
I lose, I lose. Sometimes you lose. But, you know, it's at least close.
If I win this this year, like Ray Lewis,
yeah,
that's two for me.
That's two for you.
I got a nice You Mad Bro hat that can be put up for the winner between the two of us.
Well, then I hope it's fitted for your head. Because it's looking like unless something random happens here that you're definitely going to be winning this. But and congratulations to you, man.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Well, let's look at the Seahawkers podcast overall leaderboard. This would be for the KJ Wright autographed football, and Easley Street hanging on there at the top, 23-30, 20 points ahead of Lieutenant Nacho Cheese. and Biggity Cool there at 2,300, along with the Drop Bears. I looked up this week, Adam. Do you know what Drop Bears are?
No.
They are in Australia. Mm-hmm. They are the meat-eating koala bears that attack non-indigenous. So if you speak with a non-Australian accent walking through the, you know, the shrubs of Australia, mm-hmm. the drop bears will drop on you and attack you and likely kill you.
Crikey! That's terrifying. That can't be a real thing.
It's not, but it's really fun.
That is fun. I like that. Yeah.
It gives people a good reason to not visit Australia, which, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's like Montana. It stinks here. Don't come.
Yeah. Well, grizzly bears.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Those
are drop bears. They'll drop right out of a tree on you.
And moving over to the Patron League. This is for the Steve Largent autographed jersey, Easley Street on top as well, along with Lieutenant Nacho Cheese and the Drop Bears within 30 points between Gary and Dave there.
Okay.
Within 20 points. It'll be interesting to see how they go with the championship game and then with the Super Bowl, because the mm-hmm. picks are hidden.
Yes. So we'll see if they pick a few underdogs there to try to catch up. I mean, it's a legitimate strategy. I'm trying it right now.
You never know. So
you never know.
Tune in. Probably we may have an answer. We may have a winner next week, depending on how things go. If Easley Street's ahead by 20.
Yep, it's wrapped up. Call it a season, and Easley Street leads more or less wire to wire.
Yeah, and with next weekend being the induction, you know, the announcements of who's inducted in the Hall of Fame, work out really well for Easley Street.
It seems fitting. It seems fitting. It's been a fun year for the Pick'ems for sure, man. I've really enjoyed it. I enjoy the banner with everybody. Looking forward to the Pick'em Leagues again next year.
Absolutely. So let's get into some reviews, Adam. And
all right.
First iTunes review in a month and a half, and yes. It's a 1-star review.
All right.
Which
1-star, huh?
Which, you know, listen up, folks.
They misclick, maybe?
I don't know. Judging by the headline.
Oh, okay.
It's a 1-star headline. It says, Adam Emmert is a moron.
Okay. Perfect.
And I did not write this. This was BPAGS 85.
Oh, it wasn't my mom either that wrote this?
Does she tend to go with the username BPAGS 85?
She usually goes with Adam Emmert's a moron. I know that much.
He's a try-hard Skip Bayless wannabe, says things for shock and awe. That guy needs to leave because he literally brings the quality of the podcast down. That's it. And here's the thing that I would say. There's a huge difference between Adam and Skip Bayless. Bayless says things that there is no way he possibly believes just to get attention. Adam genuinely believes his bad takes. Like when he took the joy of that the Cowboys season was ruined when Tony Romo got injured in the preseason.
I didn't know that I took joy in that.
You took some amount of joy that the Cowboys season was ruined.
Yeah, I took a little glee in that. That's fine. I don't know, man. So I guess a fair review. I don't know, man. I certainly don't feel like a shock jock. That's for sure. Hey, I have opinions. I'm gonna go with them. I like to joke around, and that's that. I guess.
I know. So, I was joking.
Thanks for the review, though.
It does add us another review on our review list. So
absolutely, man. Yeah. I mean, all attention's good attention. So appreciate the review, man. Hope you find another podcast where people are humorless and don't have anything interesting to say. And yeah. I hope that fits your taste.
Because if it were just me, that's exactly what this show would be.
Nah, there's some humor there. It's just a drier humor that you gotta get to know you to find it.
That's
and then once
true.
You know, then it's hilarious.
Well, we did get another review from JLW Ring of Honor on Stitcher. It says, great podcast. This podcast is a great way to keep up with what is happening with the team and stay connected week to week. Listening to Adam go off the rails almost makes me want to buy him a George Fant jersey. Listening to Brandon reel him back in and move the podcast forward is equally entertaining. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. And see, I think that review, they understand kind of the purpose of, you know, having energy and, talking how you feel. I mean, that's kind of the point. Like, we have some fun with it. And I think people enjoy it.
That's what the show is supposed to be. It's supposed to be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Plus, I don't think I look like Skeletor like Skip Bayless does.
No, that's true.
Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah.
But appreciate the review, guys. Seriously, though, even if they are 1-star reviews and you want to pay me, do it. Have at it. And we enjoy getting the reviews. It helps everybody find the show. It's good for us. And we appreciate everyone who does it. So get on there, either that's iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is you listen to the podcast. Chime in with your 2 cents and let us know what you think about the show, and let other people know what you think about the show. And, you know, they can look at their ratings and see, what is it, like 165 5-star reviews and like 4 1-star reviews. And then they can make an informed decision on whether or not the podcast is good or not.
They can decide for themselves who is right. The Cowboys fans that think we stink. Or the actual Seahawks fans that seem to enjoy the show.
Exactly. Or just football fans. So get in there and do that. We appreciate everybody who does, even if they're tough ones. I never started this show thinking that I wouldn't get a whole rash of crap starting this
show. That's true. That's true. Yeah. You're probably it's a little overdue.
Yeah. Well, I'm stunned it took this long.
Right. Yeah. We're 4 years in.
I know, right? And I think I've only had like 2 people call me out directly.
Yeah.
So out of the thousands that listen,
so
I'm
get
I'm
on stung. It, people.
Yeah. I mean, tell me I'm a moron.
All right. Well, let's talk about what to look forward to this offseason, because in addition to reviews, we kind of like to get your feedback as to some of the things that we should do in the offseason. You know, more interviews, you know, trying with either former players or current players. Because of the incredible support that we've gotten from our members of the flock, you know, we're going to try and continue to have something out for you every week. Mm-hmm. Going back to some of the off-season garbage that we were talking about, about the negative attention on players. Maybe we need some episodes that focus on why we like particular players on our team to remind people of why they should be fans of particular players, of all the great things that they do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great idea. Another thing I've been kind of kicking around, I haven't brought up to you yet, though, Brandon, was the idea that maybe we take one of the older seasons, you know, maybe one of the seasons from the 80s that people like even myself that don't know a ton about those seasons, you know, considering I was in like the third grade second grade when a lot of those were going down, and talk about some of the more dominant defenses in the past or, what Dave Craig meant to the Seahawks in this season or that, or you know what I'm saying? Like I just to focus on some of the, maybe the Chuck Knoll, Chuck Knox stuff. I think that'd be fun. Maybe that'd be something that's beneficial to people.
You know, I thought it'd be fun to have an episode dedicated to teams that we sports hate, you know, like Hong Kong Hawk. He I'll pencil him in for the Patriots.
Yep.
You know, Ella, she's got the Cowboys.
Yep.
Adam, you can probably take the Cardinals.
Cardinals or the Dolphins. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, either one of those two. We could probably mm-hmm. find somebody else for the Cardinals. But yeah, those teams that we just unload on these particular teams of why we dislike them so much.
Oh, for sure. And I would love, see, the idea too is that you can infect some other people with your sports hate for those teams and like build that.
Yeah. Give them some
for
fuel.
Those other teams. Yeah, exactly. Kind of like that writer for the Seahawks was doing, you know, trying to give people some fuel for their sports hate for the Seahawks.
Yeah, except, yeah. You know, we do it for other teams, not in our, you know, the one that we actually do like.
Right, exactly. Yeah, not the ones that we cover on a regular basis.
Right. But yeah, you could do a voice memo. You could send that in. Email would work, too. But yes, yeah, just the fire and vitriol that you have for those particular teams. I think that would be fun.
I think that would be fun, too.
Or you could do like Jerry Keeney in Houston and send in clips that you find interesting and want to comment on. He emails in, says, guys, I'm pretty bitter about this season as well as how some of the players have acted in the media when things didn't go their way. Sherman and Bennett come to mind. Well, our team is known as being brash, in your face, and outspoken. And so when our team doesn't look good again this year, we shouldn't be surprised by the media lashing out. Here is blowhard Michael Wilbon, who somehow still has a job in TV. I'm sure he's a good sports writer, right? Bloviating about the Seahawks. I stole this from the January 17th podcast on Brock and Salk. And I say, set this aside. And when the Seahawks go on to win another Super Bowl, let this garbage spewing forth from Wilbon back out into the wild and ensure he and his quote unquote fans get to swallow it. as much as I am pissed about our team, offensive line, assistant head coach slash O-line coach, and again, our failure to keep running the ball versus Atlanta when it worked on the first drive, I despise this kind of garbage from Hot Take ESPN. ESPN and Michael Wilbon, do better. From Jerry. And I don't know if you've heard this clip, Adam, but
I've not.
All right. So here's Wilbon talking about the Seahawks.
Okay.
Bennett, all of them. I loved it. Shut up.
It's fantastic.
Wait.
You are attacking everybody.
All they are now is an ordinary washed up former champion, and they run their mouths and tell you what they're not going to talk about, not going to do. Them and their over caffeinated coach who clearly stops at every corner in Seattle and drinks something, one of those lattes, something special.
You know what you sound like?
Shut up, Seattle. You guys are overrated now. You don't win anything. Shut up.
We're overrated and it's over.
Yeah, it's overrated. It's over. I actually like Wilbon for the most part.
Yeah, I do usually.
And I've always loved PTI. I mean, I listened to Kornheiser and Wilbon go back and forth when Tony had his radio show on ESPN, and he was a guy that actually preceded Colin Cowherd at the early morning slot. And so got to know those two guys through that. I mean, not that I know them personally, but the idea of their show and who they are as reporters. Hey, Wilbon gets fired up every now and then. It's kind of funny to me. Sure, we're overrated. You're right. We'll see you next year. We'll talk about how overrated we are.
Yeah, we'll hold on to that one.
Let's go into the divisional round again. Overrated. Wait a second. I had a quick question. Where did the Bears finish this year? Wilbon being a Chicago guy.
Yeah. And when are they going to be back in the playoffs? When's their window going to open?
Matt Barkley will lead them to the playoffs next year, Brandon.
No, try and say that with a straight face now.
Okay. Matt Barkley.
Can't do it.
It's like riding a jet ski with a frown. You can't do it.
Well, speaking of riding something with a frown, Michael in San Diego, we can cue the breakfast music on this one.
Oh, man. Okay. Bring on the breakfast music.
Well,
catfish.
I really wanted to win, but this team hasn't played particularly well on the road this year. Injuries played a factor in this game and the entire season. My girlfriend has been sick as a dog for a week. But knowing how important this game was to me and all the 12s, she stepped up. Sadly, the team let her down. It would have been nice if the team played any pass defense today. I don't know enough about the defensive schemes and such, but it sure seems to me that more often than not, teams were able to find holes in our zone. Maybe that was due more to missing key personnel in certain positions, but just my observation. I hope Schneider addresses some of the team's weaknesses this offseason. Clearly, we have some voids that need to be filled. This team is not on par with the Super Bowl team. It's better than average, but nowhere near as dominating. On a positive note, now that the Chargers left San Diego, my friend's 12-year-old was looking for a new team, and he has decided to become a 12.
Yes.
Thanks for all the great work you do. I've enjoyed listening to you greatly since I found the pod 2 years ago. Keep up the great work, enjoy the offseason, and get ready for next year. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Michael. I think first off, Michael's girlfriend, that's a good woman. She's a good woman. That's a keeper.
That's incredible.
That's a keeper.
I expect a wedding invite, Michael. This is because
you better be putting a ring on that.
You better be putting a ring on that.
Yeah. But I totally, the idea that the defense got chewed up a little bit this year, I don't know if it's key personnel or not. I think one of the things is that the Seahawks definitely adjusted this year. As much as we talked about the offensive line this year, didn't it feel like we talked about covering tight ends that way last year?
Yeah.
You know, pretty much week in, week out, it was a big thing.
Yeah.
How often did we talk about covering tight
ends?
Barely
at all. I mean, there were a couple moments, but those are going to happen throughout a season. It's not like a tight end's not going to catch a big catch.
You're going to give up one or two, right?
Right.
So, I mean, they did make some adjustments from last year, and maybe that opened some things up underneath, and they did kind of find some stuff in that those short zones, for sure. So, yeah, I think that's something that they'll look at when the season's all said and done. But I don't think that you can underestimate the loss of Earl Thomas. And I think I said on the previous pod going into this game that this could be the week that you see that show up as just like the reason why you pay a star player like that is for these moments against these high flying offense, and not having him for that game is, it was gigantic and it showed.
Well, and last year, look at it. We went up against the league MVP in Cam Newton, having an amazing year. He came back down to earth. Now Matt Ryan has an incredible year, league MVP likely. And that's who we go up against in the playoffs, too, in the divisional round. So,
well, you're going to play good teams and teams that are hot in the playoffs. You are. Like, yeah, you got to beat good teams. That's but just the way it is.
These are guys that are historically hot in these last two seasons.
So is Rodgers. Holy smokes.
Yeah, well, he's not hot against Atlanta today.
Oh, no? How's that going?
24-0 at halftime.
No way!
Yeah.
Wow. That's stunning. God, this is going to be a gross Super Bowl.
I don't know what would be worse. I think Steelers-Falcons would not be good.
That's the worst possible matchup, in my opinion.
And so the other option is Atlanta Patriots, as it's looking. I don't think the Packers are going to come back from 24.
Here's the thing. I know we had on the Ring of Honor, people were talking about who they could root for going forward. And I was like, screw it. Nobody. This sucks.
Yeah.
Originally, when that was going down, Chiefs were still in. I was like, well, maybe I'll root for the Chiefs. My dad's a big Chiefs fan. You know, for my dad.
Yeah.
You know, feel like, yeah, I can feel good about that. Then they got knocked out. And then on my drive back from Washington yesterday, I kind of had the epiphany. I really want to see Tom Brady take the trophy from Roger Goodell after being suspended at the beginning of this season.
You're rooting for the Patriots, Adam.
I know. I think I want to see that. I'm actually, it's more to watch Goodell have to have egg on his face.
Yeah.
It's more rooting for a bad moment for Goodell than for the Patriots. But I kind of, that would be sort of enjoyable.
I think I made this point to you and you kind of poo-pooed it.
I did. Yeah. No, you were right and I was wrong. You're the best. I'm the worst. You're good looking. I'm unattractive.
Yep.
You're smart. I'm dumb. You're right. No, you're right on this. I come around to your way of thinking. Yeah.
Well, getting back to Michael, he did send another email later on, said two thoughts that I had over the weekend. The first is that I listened to the last half of the most recent show after the divisional playoff round. I chuckled a bit when you began talking about Devin Hester being the new quote unquote bear catcher and knee taker. I gotta say he put on quite a show. Too bad some of it was negated by holding calls. Second is this, the Seahawks are 1-1 in the Super Bowl before Russell Wilson began dating Ciara. Since they began their relationship, they haven't made it past the divisional round. Coincidence. In all seriousness, I hope everybody comes back to the spring healthy and ready. It looks like this was a frustrating season for the players as well as the fans. Maybe this will be enough to refocus on that prize for next year. Michael. Yeah.
That's funny. It's the off season.
I'm glad Michael tagged that within all seriousness afterward, because I think Russell Wilson's relationship status has as little to do about this team's success in the playoffs is just about your relationship status, Michael, with
yeah, right. That seemed to have a more of an effect, you know, like, but here's the thing. He kind of preemptively wrote that story. You know what I mean? Like, because that's going to come out through the offseason. This is the type of catfish that we're going to be talking about, like, as the offseason rolls on.
Not we. Not you and I.
No, we will. We'll have to address some of this BS.
Oh, okay.
We do it every offseason. I get all mad. I'm like, I can't wait for football to come back. We can talk about real things on the field and blah, blah, blah. And I don't want to talk about rumors. And, like, we'll do it. It's going to happen.
Here's the thing, though. Russell Wilson's going to have a new baby, and you can bet he's going to win. He's going to want to win one for his son to see him, you know, hold up that trophy.
Sure. Sounds good. He's definitely not motivated enough on his own. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Right. But Devin Hester, that was an incredible performance. Oh, it was hard to waste that
throwback performance, wasn't it? I know.
Gosh, that was hard to
watch the wasting of that.
That was really fun to see.
It was. And I mean, good for Devin Hester, too. Like, that's a... I mean, how many guys have made it into the Hall of Fame as returners?
He's got to be. He's got to make it.
I would think so, right? I mean, I think of him. When I think of all-time great returners, he pops up in my mind. Brian Mitchell pops up in my mind. Maybe those are the two that pop up first and foremost for me as guys that I think could legitimately be Hall of Famers as returners.
Yeah.
Dante Hall, maybe?
Yeah,
I don't know that he did it for an extended period enough, but for a while there, holy smokes.
But for Devin Hester,
if you are a fan of football and you haven't watched Dante Hall punt return highlights. Just do yourself a favor right now. Turn off the show, YouTube that stuff, and you're going to enjoy it. It was fun.
But that's, I like, Jay Moore, who is on Fox Sports.
Yeah.
He has the kind of that name test of, do you belong in Hall of Fame because of your name? And Devin Hester is one of those guys of, you just say Devin Hester and you say, yes, Hall of Famer for sure. You know, Tom
Brady.
That's
a Hall of Famey sounding name. Yeah.
Well, and just because as a football fan, you know that player.
Right.
And they had such an impact that you can, when you hear their name, you can picture some of those plays that they were such a big part of. You can see Devin Hester running the ball back for touchdown after touchdown, in the Super Bowl against the Colts, running back the kickoff. I was just going to bring that up.
Yeah, the Bears got smoked in that game. The only Bear that didn't get smoked in that game was Devin Hester. Yeah. He takes the opening kickoff to the Heezy. Like, that's how that game started out. That wasn't a Devin Hester problem, he was a catalyst for those Bear teams that were really good on defense and then on special teams. And man, did Devin Hester strike fear into you as a return man?
Yes.
Did you seriously think about kicking away from him on a very when you kicked to him as an opposing team, did you have a sinking feeling in your stomach? Yes. Devin Hester was that guy.
Yeah.
And for a long time.
Right. Really long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why Brian Mitchell was one of those guys for me that pops into my mind that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to some more email.
Holy smokes, more. All right, perfect.
Ryan from Fairbanks, Alaska says, hey guys, just wanted to drop a note of thanks for all the great shows, all the discussion, and all the entertainment this season. I found your show during the preseason this year and really enjoyed listening throughout the season, although I will admit it was difficult to listen to after a loss due to certain individuals who are not as overly optimistic as I am.
Who's that? Who are they calling out in that?
I don't know.
Because I feel like that was, I think that was directed to me.
It could be.
I think shots were fired. That's fine.
Right. Ryan That's isn't fine. Being very specific here, but he says, I really try to make every effort to do my part for our guys this Saturday. See, this game was on Fox, and the only room in my house where I can get reception for Fox is the living room. We lost every game I watched in the living room this year.
Oh.
Therefore, I spent about an hour before the game trying different cords and antenna combinations to get the game working in our computer room. I did finally get it working, but it didn't work well. And I spent the fourth quarter literally holding the antenna because if I put it down, it would instantly cut out. I did my best, but it looks like it wasn't quite enough to help our boys. While things didn't go our way on Saturday, there was still a lot to be excited about. Jimmy Graham's touchdown, Baldwin tearing it up for that 30-yard touchdown in the fourth, Devin Hester doing so much more than fair catching punts and downing kickoffs, to name a few. Side note, when Baldwin scored in the fourth, I started jumping up and down and lost reception again, and then had to settle back down and find the reception sweet spot again for the next play. When all is said and done, I count the season strongly in the good season category. In fact, I wore my John Kitna jersey yesterday to remind myself that things are pretty great these days. Looking forward to hearing more from you guys over the offseason. Here's to another great season in the history books and to the start of another championship offseason. Go Hawks from Ryan.
Go Hawks. And you know what, Ryan? I appreciate your effort to watch the game. I can relate to that. There's been days where I've had to do those sort of things to just cajole the signal just enough to like watch the game. And they didn't lose because of your lack of effort, man. Like that was solid.
That was very solid. One from Aaron in Brandon, Manitoba. I'm writing this the day after our loss to the Falcons. This is a day when all of us 12s are not feeling great about the game, or maybe even about the entire 2016 regular season. This is not the same as last year when we and the team felt a renewed energy following the loss in Carolina. This Atlanta loss does not give us the same type of hope we had entering into our Super Bowl winning season. It's tempting to go into a dark place when we see members of our team visibly upset after the loss and a number of internet trolls
catfish
on the team nonstop. To all this negativity, I counter with a bit of positivity. 1. 20 teams did not earn a spot in the playoffs, including the three other teams in our division. We should be proud of this accomplishment. Two, four teams did not make it past the wild card round. This marks the fifth consecutive year we have reached the divisional round. Another achievement to be proud of. Three, we have very few lingering injuries going into the offseason. The most serious two injured players, Earl Thomas and Tyler Lockett, have the strength and determination to return to full health and productivity. Four, we have a franchise quarterback who only just finished the fifth year of his career. There are a dozen teams in the NFL who are not fortunate enough to have a good option at quarterback. Still, there are about 10 others that either have middling placeholders under center or players who have started or soon will regress. You can criticize Russell all you want about his performance this year. I'm happy to have his ability and leadership on this roster. Five, we easily have at least 10 players on our roster who have a chance to be future Hall of Fame inductees. Six.
Ooh, that's strong.
10 is strong.
Yeah, that's a strong statement.
I'd have to, we should run down that top 10 list in the offseason of who that could be.
Write that down, because we need all the topics we can get, man.
Six, yes, we have improvements to make on the roster, but we have one of the best general managers in the game. Would you rather have Doug Whaley or Ryan Grigson? Hell no. Have faith in John Schneider and his team to make the hard decisions going forward. The challenges they face now are different from the past years. We are not rebuilding, but we have some holes that need fixing. I'm confident they can get the job done, even with our troubled O-line. Seven, we get mad at Daryl Bevel and Tom Cable from time to time, but overall, we have a terrific coaching staff led by Pete Carroll. We could be cycling through one-year appointments like the 49ers or the Bills. Rather, we have stability. And number eight, we have an owner in Paul Allen that supports the team and is not trying to move it or run it with ineptitude. I hope we can celebrate this team and keep supporting it through the offseason and into next year. We've got a lot to be proud of as Seahawks fans. Keep up the great work, guys. I'm looking forward to your offseason Seahawks football podcast. Go Hawks, from Aaron.
Well, Aaron, he clearly doesn't understand that the window is closed.
I know. Well, he's probably tuned out by now after we reminded him.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, he almost did a better job than we did explaining it earlier in the podcast of all, like, those are legitimate reasons why you look at this team going forward and say, yeah, we've got a chance to be good for a long time going forward. And really, it boils down to me, the idea that you have Russell Wilson under center. This guy didn't even miss a practice after basically having his leg tore off behind a terrible offensive line. Had a career year in yards and still managed to put up a passer rating of over 90. I mean, that's remarkable. It's remarkable. And you can build around that. And it's going to be a fun ride the next couple years to see where this team goes. And I don't know. I do feel optimistic going into it. I think I agree with Aaron.
No, I do too. And, you know, you said that he worded it very well. That's why I saved it for the end, because had I front loaded the show with that email, you know, right, people could have just tuned out after 5 minutes.
Right. Yeah. We need them to say, tuned in for us to run our rambling mouths for a little while
and
first.
And then Aaron recaps it and they can feel good about it.
Yeah, that's going to be our format now.
Here's another email that I think will close off the email very well. Okay. From Kiki in Edinburgh. Said, it usually takes me longer to pull myself out of the sulk when my beloved Hawks lose, and playoff defeats sulks are lengthy, only second to Super Bowl losses. Mm-hmm. That game summed up our season of almost there. I'm gutted, but already I can't wait for next season. Earl and Tyler Lockett will be back. Mike B's contract is all locked up. Thomas Rawls is still what we hoped that he would be, and despite a patchwork O-line, our quarterback didn't pick up any more serious injuries and managed to see out the season. Trying to see the sunny side, and next season looks good. Fingers crossed, John Schneider has his wallet open for some O-line upgrades, but we can spend all offseason mulling that over. I can't wait to hear your thoughts on that. Thank you for the podcast and the Picks and IPA show and all that you do to keep this fan base connected. I became a Patreon subscriber in March, and I can strongly encourage other listeners to do the same. For me, the offseason awaits. Watching the games, UK time means that I can now function at work on Monday mornings, and the neighbors can also get a full night of sleep on Sunday night without me screaming at the TV. I miss the Hawks already. Signed, yes. Kiki.
Thanks for writing, Kiki, and thanks for joining up this year on Patreon and getting in the flock. I mean, it is. It's one of those things that, with everybody that's done it to this point, that definitely motivates us to keep going through the off season and stay up on everything for you guys and to put out a show, because I feel like we put out some quality content even in the off season, and it's more work, and it's tougher to find that time when you know, there's more options of things to do. There's no doubt about it. So I don't know if anybody got in the flock this week, Brandon, but I don't feel like they did.
We did. And, we had one.
We did. All right. Who got in the flock?
Welcome to the flock to Brian Stevens.
Ah, thanks, Brian, for keeping us off the schneid for a week.
I know.
Man, there's one thing. I mean, if we would have gotten a bad review and a skunked when it comes to people getting in the flock in the same week, that would have rattled me a little bit.
You don't have to be rattled.
No, because Brian manned up and got in the flock, and we appreciate it, man.
And Brian spells his name the correct way. Brian with a Y, which is the way my brother spells it. And, you know, not the Brian with an I.
That's not the right way. Your mom, I mean, I love Glenda, but, like, she's got some spelling issues, man. Like, I don't know. My name is spelled correctly.
Everybody that spells it with an O is wrong.
Are they?
I have to stick up for my parents.
Yeah, I know. Okay. All right. But we appreciate Brian getting in the flock. We definitely could use everybody else to get in the flock as well. If you haven't, I don't know. I've been seeing people have been getting the stuff that you've sent out to flock members here, Brandon, and they seem pretty excited about it. One of the cool things with the people that have gotten in the Ring of Honor and have donated on that level, one thing that I found to be very cool was all the people who wrote what a great time they had connecting with everybody there throughout the season, even after the loss to Atlanta. And it's such a cool community and a forum to be a part of. So getintheflock.com, you know, just a couple bucks a month, and you can increase the funness of your fandom.
It's true. And we can send you a sticker and you can get bonus shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a good deal all around.
It's a good deal. Yeah. You do get value for the money that you donate. I feel like, anyway.
I hope so. Well, Adam, what do you say we get into some do better and better at life?
All right, man. Why don't you kick us off and do better?
I will kick us off because Frederick County Public Schools, they need to do better, Adam. This is going off the football board, but it lands in the social media spotlight. Because they fired a woman named Katie Nash, who was running the school district's Twitter feed a little while back. And for what I think was something that was pretty awesome, one of the kids, his name is Nathan, apparently, according to his Twitter account, tweets at the Frederick County Public Schools, says, "Close school tomorrow, please." And he spells tomorrow TAMMAROW.
Oh no.
Tamarrow.
No. Dude, you can't misspell your tweets to the school, man.
And Ms. Nash responds by saying, "But then how would you learn how to spell tomorrow?"
Right.
Which is awesome.
That's the proper response.
Frederick County Public Schools fired her. Fired
no
her.
Way.
Yes. After she was running the Twitter account because
should of she have given him a trophy?
Apparently. I can't believe there must be something different going on that's not part of this, because the fact that she brought attention to the school district, and this is not a negative way. This is just a fun way that when people see the stuff like this and report on it, it blows up in social media. This stuff happens. This is fun.
Oh, what? Because she's embarrassing the kid? The kid typed out his own embarrassment.
Right.
I mean, I don't get it. I don't get this at all.
This is a teachable moment that she is teaching the student. And so for a public school education system, Frederick County Public Schools, for firing your communication person who is clearly teaching this student a lesson, you need to do better.
Big time do better. Man, that's horrible. I can't believe that. She wasn't even a jerk about it either.
I know. It was lighthearted.
It was playful.
Yeah. She got a thousand retweets and 1,000 likes before she started becoming people started tweeting Free Katie after they found out that her Twitter access was taken away.
Wow.
Wow.
She's going to get a job running a Twitter account of something good.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be a stepping stone for her. So, yeah, goes to show you, people out of adversity, like, there can be a lot of times in your life where you get, something bad happens, but it actually ends up being something better for you in the end. So, man, there's a lot of humorless people out there, aren't there, Brandon?
Yeah.
Like, the idea that they look at that and they say she needs to be gone, like, wow.
Well, you can follow her now at Katie Nash, and hopefully, and she was a good sport about it, too. She said she hopes her termination causes more people to get involved and interact with the school system.
Classy, man.
I know.
Totally classy. Yeah, big ups to her. All right, man. My do better this week is for one of the media people involved with the Seahawks. And we kind of called out a few people earlier on in the podcast of beat reporters and stuff like that. But this is even worse because this is a Seahawks.com reporter.
Oh, and, no.
Who I usually enjoy his articles very much, but I don't think he understands what he's doing when he writes this article. This is for Seahawks.com reporter Tony Dravetto. And basically, he writes an article, and this is the title. Seahawks planning on receiver Paul Richardson, quote, being a big factor, end quote, next year. Now you say, why would you say that he needs to do better? Because I remember last year, everybody after Tyler Lockett's breakout season getting on board and hyping him up and making a big deal out of it. And I said, this is bad, man. This is going to actually lead to something bad for Tyler. And he had a rough year as far as he didn't have that breakout year that everybody thought he would because he hurt his knee early on in the season.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that kind of kept him from being a big factor. He finally gets healthy and then his leg shatters in 17 places while trying to catch a touchdown pass. Like, I mean, the whole media jinx these guys and like make him a big fantasy target and everything. And so Paul Richards comes out and has a couple good games, which finally living up to a little bit of the potential that he has, no doubt about it. But then you come out and you start calling him out just like Tyler Lockett last year. You start building him up and hyping him up. Man, get ready for the Paul Richardson hype train for the entire summer, and it's going to effectively ruin his season for next year. So Tony, for giving Paul Richardson the jinx, do better.
I Tony probably wrote an article about how Chris Matthews needed to step up after the 2014 season.
I don't know. Well, he was still under Claire Farnsworth at that time, so I don't know if Claire might have written those articles.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Hard telling, not knowing. All I know is right now, today, that's a bad move. Like, just don't be jinxing our guys, man. And that's coming from in-house.
I know. You got to stay away from the in-house jinxes. You can't help it outside.
Exactly. Paul Richardson has been injury prone. Let's just be like, shh, Paul Richardson's not going to be a big thing next year.
Let's not talk about Paul Richardson this offseason. There is a moratorium on Paul Richardson.
Not that he's super handsome and super talented and super cool. Like, got great hands, like, and is super fat. Let's not talk about any of that.
I like it. Well, let's move on to Better at Life. And my Better at Life for Skip Bayless this week, Adam. I wanted to shout out to our members, fellow members of the flock. I want to shout out to all Seahawkers. And because a few weeks back, we had Joshua Bay of the Tornado Alley Seahawkers mm-hmm. on the show. And we talked about how the Seahawkers were kind of rallying around the Cliff Averill Home for Haiti effort. And we wanted to, as a Seahawkers family, kind of pull together the funds to build one house at $6,500. And we heard from Joshua Bay this week that, in fact, we did it. And a huge thanks to everybody in all of the Seahawkers chapters that helped donate. A special thanks to all the members of the flock who donated, because without your help, we could not have made our contribution from the Correct. Seahawkers podcast. And it was very cool to see that it all came together, and we will build a house in Haiti. Very cool.
Yeah. All of you on Patreon that support the podcast, you help provide somebody a home.
Yeah.
A place to freaking live. That's pretty amazing, pretty man. Cool. You're right. They're Better at Life than Skip Bayless all the way around. No doubt about it. Am I better at life for Skip Bayless this week? It's for America.
America.
That's right, Brandon.
You won up me.
Yeah, because look, I mean, there's a lot of people this weekend I've seen on my Facebook feed that are super up or super down over events that are transpiring this weekend, mainly the transition from one president to the next. And like, lots of people have feelings about the last president and the new ones and all that. That's fine. Put all that aside. I really don't care. Like, I mean, whether you like them or not, that's beyond the point. My point this week is that even with all those big feelings that a lot of people have on one side or the other with all that, we are having a peaceful transition of power from one president to the next, whether you like him or not. But the idea that even with all that animosity pent up on both sides, we can still do that as a nation. And there's really very few countries on the planet that get to claim that. Usually the chaos and the transition of leadership can lead to civil war. Like, it's insane. Like, we have no idea how lucky we are that this happens. And for the idea that the American political system, the American people themselves, even with as divided as everybody seems to be, we can still have that moment and move on with our lives and continue to grow as a country one way or another. I'm just really proud of that. And so I say America is better at life than the Skip Bayless.
Well, this could result in some kind of ripple in the space-time fabric, because Skip Bayless is part of America.
Right. Yeah. He's participated in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
in a small fraction of a way, Skip Bayless is better at life than Skip Bayless.
You're right. I like it. There is that feels like there's some sort of Back to the Future.
He's like
moment
1/300,000,000th of this.
Yeah. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think that's a cool thing. I mean, hooray democracy.
Yeah, I actually threw that out to my daughter this past weekend. We do this every 4 years, and we've done it at the same exact time on the same exact day every 4 years since 1790 something.
Yeah, yeah, and we've managed to pull it off.
Yeah,
you know,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm just proud of everybody. You know, I'm proud of everybody. Whether you're on one side or the other, I think we're getting through it.
Yeah.
One way or the other. Whether you're excited or bummed, we're all getting through it.
We can all share in the well done accomplishment of.
Yeah. Let's give ourselves a collective pat on the backs.
Yeah. You know? I like it. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that does it for this week's show. And like I mentioned, we will continue to be back through the off season. We talked a little bit about Pete Carroll's end of year press conference. Adam and I want to dig into that a little bit more next week, along with some of the things, some of the questions. We have all off season for questions, so we can get into those. And I think we're going to bring Clinton Bonner onto the show to talk about his 3-3 outs all throughout the year and kind of get his perspective on the season too. So look forward to that next show.
You betcha, guys. And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks!
Go Hawks!
I can't believe it's the off season.